fog first thing, and still a few early showers in the west of Scotland, but many places will have a dry day and a bright day. After the fog has cleared, we should see at least some spells of sunshine, but into the afternoon, there is the risk of the showers becoming a little bit more widespread into Northern Ireland and one or two cropping up in Northern England as well. With a little bit of sunshine, 6 or 7 degrees, your top temperature.
Thanks, Jay. And now on BBC Radio 4, Book of the Week. The inspiration for Steve McQueen's Oscar-nominated film Solomon Northup's memoir, 12 Years a Slave, depicts the harsh reality of slavery and racism in 1850s America. In today's extract, Solomon and his fellow slaves endure the cruel whims of a new master. The reader is Rashaan Stone.
Edwin Epps is a large, portly, heavy-bodied man with light hair, high cheekbones, and a Roman nose of extraordinary dimensions. At the time I came into his possession, he was fond of the bottle. When in his cups, Master Epps was a roistering, blustering, noisy fella, whose chief delight was in dancing with his niggers, or lashing them about the yard with his long whip, just for the pleasure of hearing them screech and scream as the great welts were planted on their backs. When sober, he was silent, reserved, and cunning, not beating us indiscriminately as in his drunken moments, but sending the end of his rawhide to some tender spot of a lagging slave with a sly dexterity peculiar to himself. His principal business was raising cotton. In the latter part of August begins the cotton picking season. At this time, each slave is presented with a sack. When a new hand, one unaccustomed to the business, is sent for the first time into the field, he is whipped up smartly and made for that day to pick as fast as he possibly can. At night, it is weighed so that his capability in cotton picking is known. He must bring in the same weight each night following. If it falls short, it is considered evidence that he has been laggard, and a greater or less number of lashes is the penalty. An ordinary day's work is 200 pounds. A slave who is accustomed to picking is punished if he or she brings in a less quantity than that. There is a great difference among them as regards this kind of labor. Some of them seem to have a natural knack or quickness. Patsy, of whom I shall have more to say, was known as the most remarkable cotton picker on Bayou Boeuf. She picked with both hands, and with such surprising rapidity that 500 pounds a day was not unusual for her. The day's work over in the field, the baskets are carried to the gin house, where the cotton is weighed. A slave never approaches the gin house with his basket of cotton, but with fear. If it falls short in weight, he knows that he must suffer. And if he has exceeded it by 10 or 20 pounds, in all probability his master will measure the next day's task accordingly. So, whether he has too little or too much, his approach to the gin house is always with fear and trembling. It was rarely that a day passed by without one or more whippings. The delinquent, whose weight had fallen short, was taken out, stripped, made to lie on the ground, face downwards, when he received a punishment proportioned to his offense. The crack of the lash and the shrieking of the slaves can be heard from dark till bedtime on Epps's plantation, any day almost, during the entire period of the cotton picking season. Epps was in the habit of coming home intoxicated. At such times he was boisterous and half crazy. Then there must be a merrymaking. Then all must move to the measure of a tune. All of us would be assembled in the large room of the great house. No matter how worn out and tired we were, there must be a general dance. Then there must be no halting or delay, no slow or languid movements. All must be brisk and lively and alert. Epps's portly form mingled with those of his slaves, moving rapidly through all the mazes of the dance. Patsy was slim and straight. She stood erect as the human form is capable of standing. There was an air of loftiness in her movement that neither labor, nor weariness, nor punishment could destroy. No horse could fling her from his back. She was a skillful teamster. She turned as true a furrow as the best, and at splitting rails, there were none who could excel her. Such lightning-like motion was in her fingers as no other fingers ever possessed. And therefore it was that in cotton-picking time, Patsy was queen of the field. She had a genial and pleasant temper, and was faithful and obedient. Naturally, she was a joyous creature, a laughing, light-hearted girl, rejoicing in the mere sense of existence. Yet Patsy wept oftener and suffered more than any of her companions. Her back bore the scars of 1,000 stripes, not because she was backward in her work, nor because she was of an unmindful and rebellious spirit, but because it had fallen to her lot to be the slave of a licentious master and a jealous mistress. She shrank before the lustful eye of the one, and was in danger even of her life at the hands of the other. And between the two, she was indeed accursed. In the great house, for days together, there were high and angry words, poutings and estrangement, whereof she was the innocent cause. Nothing delighted the mistress so much as to see Patsy suffer. She walked under a cloud. If she uttered a word in opposition to her master's will, the lash was resorted to at once to bring her to subjection. If she was not watchful when about her cabin or when walking in the yard, a billet of wood or a broken bottle perhaps hurled from her mistress's hand would smite her unexpectedly in the face. The enslaved victim of lust and hate, Patsy had no comfort in her life. To be rid of Patsy seemed to be the ruling thought and passion of my mistress. The pride of the haughty woman was aroused. The blood of the fiery Southern boiled at the sight of Patsy, and nothing less than trampling out the life of the helpless bondwoman would satisfy her. Sometimes the current of her wrath turned upon him whom she had just cause to hate. At such times, Patsy trembled with fear, for she knew, from painful experience, that if mistress should work herself to the red-hot pitch of rage, Epps would quiet her at last with a promise that Patsy should be flogged, a promise he was sure to keep. Thus did pride and jealousy and vengeance war with avarice and brute passion in the mansion of my master, filling it with daily tumult and contention. Thus, upon the head of Patsy, the simple-minded slave, in whose heart God had implanted the seeds of virtue, the force of all these domestic tempests spent itself at last. At length, the green-eyed monster crept into the soul of Epps also, and then it was that he joined with his wrathful wife in an infernal jubilee over the girl's miseries. On a Sabbath day in hoeing time, we were on the bayou bank, washing our clothes as was our usual custom. Presently, Patsy was missing. Epps called aloud, but there was no answer. In the course of a couple of hours, she was seen approaching from the direction of Shaw's plantation. Shaw was a notorious profligate, and withal not on the most friendly terms with Epps. He had made a wife of his slave, Harriet, and she, knowing Patsy's troubles, was kind to her. Patsy found her master in a fearful rage on her return. His violence so alarmed her that at first she attempted to evade direct answers to his questions, which only served to increase his suspicions. She finally, however, drew herself up proudly and in a spirit of indignation boldly denied his charges. "Missus don't give me soap to wash with, as she does the rest,"
said Patsy. And you know why. I went over to Harriet's to get a piece. And saying this, she drew it forth from a pocket in her dress and showed it to him.
You lie, you black wench, shouted Epps.
I don't lie, massa. If you kill me, I'll stick to that.
Oh, I'll fetch you down. I'll learn you to go to Shaw's. I'll take the starch out of you.
Then turning to me, he ordered 4 stakes to be driven into the ground. When they were driven down, he ordered Patsy to be stripped of every article of dress. Ropes were then brought, and the girl was laid upon her face, her wrists and feet each tied firmly to a stake. Stepping to the piazza, he took down a heavy whip, and placing it in my hands, commanded me to lash her. I was compelled to obey. Nowhere that day, on the face of the whole earth, I venture to say, was there such a demoniac exhibition witnessed as then ensued. Mistress Epps stood on the piazza among her children, gazing on the scene with an air of heartless satisfaction. The slaves were huddled together at a little distance, their countenance indicating the sorrow of their hearts. Poor Patsy prayed piteously for mercy, but her prayers were in vain. Epps ground his teeth and stamped upon the ground, screaming at me like a mad fiend to strike harder.
Oh, mercy, massa. Oh, have mercy, do. Oh, God, pity me, Patsy exclaimed continually, struggling fruitlessly.
When I had struck her as many as 30 times, I stopped and turned round towards Epps, hoping he was satisfied. But Epps was yet furious and savage as ever, and swearing he would flog her until she wished she was in hell. Throwing down the whip, I declared I could punish her no more. He ordered me to go on, threatening me with a severer flogging than she had received in case of refusal. My heart revolted at the inhuman scene, and, risking the consequences, I absolutely refused to raise the whip. He then seized it himself and applied it with 10-fold greater force than I had. The painful cries and shrieks of Patsy, mingling with the loud and angry curses of Epps, loaded the air. At length, she ceased struggling. Her head sank listlessly on the ground. From that time forward, she was not what she had been. The burden of a deep melancholy weighed heavily on her spirits. She fell into a mournful and desponding mood, and oftentimes would start up in her sleep, and with raised hands plead for mercy. She became more silent than she was, toiling all day in our midst, yet not uttering a word. A careworn, pitiful expression settled on her face, and it was her humor now to weep rather than rejoice. If ever there was a broken heart, one crushed and blighted by the rude grasp of suffering misfortune, it was Patsy's. I knew not whither to look for deliverance. The summer of my life was passing away. I felt I was growing prematurely old, that a few years more, and toil, and grief, and the poisonous miasma of the swamps would accomplish their work on me, would consign me to the grave's embrace, to molder and be forgotten. Repelled, betrayed, cut off from the hope of succor, I could only prostrate myself upon the earth and groan in unutterable anguish.
Glory, glory, alleluia, quid alimam illa.
Roshan Stone was reading 12 Years a Slave by Solomon Northup, and the producer was Kirstine Cameron. Well, there's a clue to what's coming up in just over a minute's time as we go sailing by towards the shipping forecast. And now with the time at 12 minutes to 1, the shipping forecast issued by the Met Office on behalf of the Maritime and Coast Guard Agency at 0015 today, Friday the 28th of February. There are warnings of gales in Viking, North Utsira, South Utsira, White, Portland, Plymouth, Biscay, Fitzroy, Sole, Lundy, Fastnet, Shannon, Rockall, Hebrides, Bailey, Fair Isle, Faroes and Southeast Iceland. The general synopsis at 1800 Low Shannon 989. Expected France 995 by 1800 today. Low Faroes 977, slow moving, filling 982 by the same time. The area forecasts for the next 24 hours. Viking North Utsira, southeasterly 7 to severe gale 9.